Forum. The first item under the agenda would be any delegation from the public that would like to address this board. Are there any delegations? Seeing no delegations, we'll go on to the minutes. You've all received a copy of the January 26th meeting minutes in attachment 2A. Are there any corrections to those minutes? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Staff reports. The first one would be attachment 3A. Jason?
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 3A was in the folders at the door. It's the financial progress report, which takes us through February 29th of this year, which is two-thirds of the way through our fiscal year. And since we're two-thirds of the way through, I'm pleased to report that we've expended 55% of the funding, so we're well within budget. All the individual budget items look good. And with that, the staff is willing to answer any questions, and if not, I think we're looking for a motion.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Technical progress report.
Okay, thanks again. One thing I wanted to mention before I launched into the report, which won't be too long, is I wanted to acknowledge the service of Harold Walker, Jr. from Kent and Portage County. He's been the alternate for Commissioner Frederick for many years, and this is his last official meeting with us. He's being replaced by Christopher Malin, but I know Harold will continue to be active and involved, and I don't want to put you on the spot, Harold, but if you wanted to say anything, please feel free.
Well, I just wanted to give you my blessing.
We could use it. Thanks a lot. Harold's put a lot of volunteer time into this over the years, so that's really been a big help to us, especially his interest in biking and so forth, and we'll talk a lot about biking on this agenda. I wanted to give you a quick update on what was going on in Washington, which I don't claim to know more about than anybody else, but they are debating right now the new transportation bill. This kind of changes daily, but there's been various proposals put forth by the Senate and the House. At one point, the House had proposed actually eliminating all funding for public transit and the Transportation Enhancement Program, which funds bike and pedestrian projects. That's gone back into the bill. I think from the staff's perspective, we're pleased to see that. So there were some of those bigger issues that were being debated earlier. Now there's, I think, more of a convergence, it's safe to say, by the two sides debating the bill. But where we stand right now is there's, I think the biggest issue is the debate between the Senate, which wants to have a two-year extension bill, and the House, which wants to have a six-year full bill. I think I got that right, which one won, what's what. But the Senate version of the bill had about $109 billion over the next 2 years. That actually represents an increase in funding by about $15 billion a year, which is pretty significant. I don't know what's going to happen on that. One thing they haven't, I think, and it's safe to say either House or either party hasn't really come to any sort of a consensus on how we would pay for this. The gas tax really isn't sufficient. They've been borrowing money from other programs to put into the Highway Trust Fund. I don't really anticipate they are going to come to consensus on that this year, but I hope I'm wrong about that. Other than that, I think for what it all means for AMATS is right now we're kind of in a holding program. We're going to continue to program projects with the federal allocation levels that we have. And maybe by the May meeting we'll have more to report. It's probably safe to say if they haven't come to agreement by the May meeting, we probably won't have a bill until after November of 2012. So we'll keep you posted on that. And if you have questions or read things in the news, I mean, the staff will do our best to try to put perspective on it as well as we're able to. One thing I wanted to announce is I've been looking at, speaking of our budget earlier, some of our financial information. We're going to start in with our May meeting, go into an all-electronic mail out and eliminate the paper. I think for a couple reasons, it will be greener. It will save us a lot of you know, kind of scrambling around in the office. But the biggest thing is it costs us about $2,000 every time we do a mailing when you factor in all the costs. So if that does present any sort of a hardship for your community, I think we probably have very few members that don't have email access, but we'll get you a copy of the mail out. But and we'll continue to have them here at the door so you can grab one. But I wanted to announce that. We'll send you a reminder, so if May comes and you're like, where is my mail out, we'll just remind you via email that it's up on the website. I'm pleased to announce we did launch our Switching Gears website, which is switching-gears.org. That's our new bike advocacy website. Krista's going to talk about our bike plan in a little bit, but we've had a really good response from the public on that. We've already had quite a few people that have registered, and it's kind of part social networking for cyclists, part information dissemination as far as what we're doing with bike planning, but it's also what's very useful to us, I think, as a staff, is it gives us a chance to interact with cyclists and let them interact with each other, and I think it helps as kind of a public involvement tool for us to know, have our fingers on the pulse of the community. And then the final item I wanted to announce is at the technical committee level, we have been having discussions about pavement condition ratings. And just real quickly, to put perspective on what that means, from an AMAT's point of view, we use pavement condition ratings when we evaluate resurfacing projects with the logic, which I think is pretty solid, that the worse the pavement condition is, the higher the priority that road should get to be resurfaced. But some of the members of a lot of your communities at the technical level, the engineers and so forth, have brought up that there might be cost savings to be obtained by looking at pavement conditions on more of a regional basis. Right now, a lot of communities pay on an individual business, on an individual basis, to either hire consultants or have in-house people go out and evaluate pavement condition. ODOT does it too for the state routes and the federal aid highways, but we thought that might be a nice thing to at least investigate as far as, are there opportunities, maybe AMATS could even do a collaboration where we would get all or most of our members involved in a joint program to do that. And so to that end, the staff put together a survey. We're going to survey each community, see what they do to collect this data, how much they pay, and so forth. And then I think we'll get the technical folks back together and eventually come back to you, and you know, either in May or it would probably be over the summer by the time we analyze everything and just let you know what the committee's recommendation is. And then you could take it from there, deciding whether you think it's a good idea. But if you have any questions about that or anything else that I mentioned in the progress report, I'd be glad to answer those. Otherwise, I think I'm done.
Are there any other questions? If not, we'll move on to item C, the status of the AMAT sub-allocated federal funds. Mr. Vodison has a presentation.
Thank you. Now that we're done with our round of funding, our TAC TIP subcommittee had reconvened back in February to discuss some, get caught up on some of the issues, and I'm going to briefly go over some of those issues that were discussed at their meeting. An update on ODOT's proposal to retract MPO funding. As most of you know, ODOT has a proposal that they would take back funding from the MPOs if we have carryovers that are above a certain threshold amount. The Ohio MPOs created a subcommittee to discuss this issue. We had a couple conference calls already. And one of the big issues in this proposal is just maybe allow some, if we do go over those thresholds, ODOT's going to allow us to have waivers that they won't take back money if we get approved by certain waivers. At this point in time, we're just trying to get clarification on what those waivers would be. And one of them would be that we could be saving up for a project in the future. But they are going to be fair, and at this point in time, we've got some comments over back to ODOT, and we're going to discuss a little bit more maybe at the end of this month about this issue. But once it's finalized, we'll take it to back to our TIP subcommittee. They'll discuss it, and then any ramifications to our funding program, see how that turns out, then we'll bring it back to this committee for your discussion. Dealing with inadequate funding levels, if all the MPOs in Ohio do what we just did over programming, that means there's a possibility in the near future that we'll come to a year that we don't have enough funds to cover our projects, and there also will not be another MPO to trade funds with, as we've been able to do in the past. So if that does happen, the subcommittee discusses the situation and basically agreed that it'd be a first-come, first-served basis, so that we'd be funding projects in any particular fiscal year until the funds run out. Those that are not funded that year will simply be pushed to the next fiscal year. But the subcommittee would meet just to ratify which projects get sold in any fiscal year if that happens. Delivering projects on schedule. As I mentioned, now we have enough projects in our program. Now we have to focus on delivering those projects. Both central office reviews both the FPOs and the districts on how well they do delivering projects. They'll look at the projects in the program in a certain year, and then which ones actually got encumbered by the end of the fiscal year. And then again, just to demonstrate that we do need the funds that come to this area and that we spend them in an efficient manner, we need to try to put forth every effort to make sure these projects get sold on time. Requests for project funds. Occasionally we'll get requests outside of our normal two-year cycles of funding. The subcommittee discussed this issue. They're strongly recommending that these requests don't happen outside of our funding cycles. And they've also requested that we put together some language to update the funding policy on what direction we should take if we do get a request outside of our funding cycles. And we'll put a draft together, some language for the funding policy. We'll run that by the subcommittee and then it'll ultimately come to this committee probably in May. And then the last item, payment condition ratings. Jason already discussed that. We'll have a survey out in the next couple of weeks to see what the status is of our members on their use of payment condition ratings. And then I didn't really have anything to mention on our funding table. You just see the balances down below. This includes all new projects that were funded both in December and January. We may not include them as an individual line item, but they eventually will once we start getting bids for those projects. So that's all I have on this item. If anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to
answer. Are there any other questions? Thank you. The next item on the agenda is old business. There's one item under old business, which is the 2012 bike plan. We have a presentation from Ms. Beniston.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The purpose of the 2012 bike plan is to create a regional bike network. The trail recommendations and on-road priority corridors are 4A. There's maps of all of those. The bike plan will also be an input into the upcoming 2035 transportation plan. We presented the draft bike plan to all the AMATS committees at the January meetings. Since then, we've received additional comments through the plan update subcommittee, and also we had two public meetings in February. We had them in Kent and Ravenna, and we had over 60 people. We had a great turnout, we think, and a lot of positive feedback. The main comments were additions to the on-road corridors, concerns about specific design issues such as grates, rumble strips, maintaining either shoulders or bike lanes free of debris, and also questions about how projects were funded through local communities and through AMS. All these comments were incorporated into the bike plan. The staff recommends approval, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. And then also, everyone has a bike user map. I think we're excited to finally get those out. Those have been going very well. We've gotten them out to, I think, every local bike shop, and you know, kind of the next step is to get them into all your communities, libraries, parks, anywhere you think would be great. We are already running low, but we are ordering 5,000 more this week, so hopefully we'll have those in 2 to 3 weeks. So contact me, and we can drop off, you know, as many as you want, or help distribute those or put those out. So if you have any comments on those, you know, just contact me for how many you want, and we can try to get those to you. We want to pass them out. But also, any comments on the bike plan, I'd be happy to answer.
Are there any other questions? The chair will entertain a motion to pass the bike plan.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Under new business, the first item would be the 2035 Regional Transportation Plan discussion. Mr. Baker?
And I'm actually going to fill in for Curtis. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Curtis isn't trying to squirm his way out of it. He just lost his voice, so I'm going to try to do his presentation justice. And Curtis, if you feel led to add anything, please feel free. But I wanted to kind of be able to have a high-level strategic conversation with all of our members here at the outset of developing our next regional transportation plan. The regional transportation plan is one of the biggest things that AMATS produces, but I think it's always important to keep in mind the plan is it's a means to an end. I mean, the whole reason we do a plan, we end up with a nice-looking document, but it's there to craft regional transportation policy. It's there to allocate funding to different priorities that we'll then go ahead and fund through our process of taking applications for projects. So before we even got started, especially since I know we have a lot of new members, I wanted to just give you a real quick overview of what is the transportation plan. Just real quickly, AMATS does a regional transportation plan every 4 years. And like I said, it really has two main focal points. The one is it does, from a federal perspective, identify all the projects that are eligible for federal transportation funds. So for your project to get transportation funds, it has to be either listed explicitly or consistent with the plan. And usually the way we do it is, if it's just looking at you, Bill, if it's the Route 8 project that went through Boston Heights, and I guess at Tony since it was ODOT's project, but that was a $100 million project. That's a huge investment. That project has been on our plan, you know, for 25 years. The good news is it's done now. But those are the kind of projects we explicitly identify. The other projects, for example, resurfacing projects, we don't have a list of every single resurfacing we think is going to be done for the next 20 years, but we put language in the plan and allocate funding kind of set aside for resurfacing. So that's kind of how the mechanics of it works. But the other thing, and this is where I think it's really key for all of you to have an opportunity to weigh in on it, is it's a policy document. It kind of sets the direction for, you know, where do we feel like the Akron metropolitan area, Summit and Portage County, and Chippewa Township need to go over the next 20 years when it comes to transportation. And obviously the staff as transportation professionals have ideas on that, but we're only one part of the equation. We want to make sure we put a plan together that reflects the desires and the needs of all the elected officials in the region. So that's just kind of the backstory. The plan, we do a plan every 4 years, I mentioned. The next one is slated to be approved in May of 2013. The plan is actually tied to federal air quality regulations, which means I think we technically have till June 30th of 2013 to get a plan done, but we'd like to do it at least a couple weeks in advance of that date. So we have May of 2013 penciled in. Right now, the staff probably kind of behind the scenes on some of these things, although you saw Krista's presentations the last couple meetings on the bike plan, have been working kind of behind the scenes on a lot of the inputs to the plan that are mostly data gathering, analyzing the condition of our roads for the purpose of trying to get a handle on what our needs are for highway maintenance, looking at congestion. We're currently doing a congestion study right now. We'll get to you later in the summer. We do ongoing analyses of crashes on our roads, so that's the safety component. The bike planning, which you heard about today, we're also working on a pedestrian plan that's going to look at where sidewalks need to go in the region and maybe other pedestrian amenities. Obviously, for a two-county region, we're looking at a fairly high-level view, but we do want to provide tools to your communities to be able to do better pedestrian planning and also provide funding, which is why I'm happy that the Transportation Enhancement Program looks like it's still intact at the federal level. Public transit, we work really close with Metro and PARTA, the two transit providers, and freight planning is another component. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of what kind of things are in there. Our last plan that was completed in 2009, Transportation Outlook, went out to the year 2030, and it had a couple major themes, and the key themes were funding was a big one. We, for those of you that weren't with the committee about a year and a half ago, we passed a resolution at this committee that passed by a narrow vote that AMATS endorsed the 10-cent per gallon increase in the federal gasoline tax. We knew full well AMATS doesn't have the power to institute an increase in the federal gas tax, but we took that back to our congressional representatives and senators. Like I was saying, in Washington, there's not a lot of closure right now on how we pay for things, but and this gets into the issue that all of you are no strangers to. In addition to funding being tight at the federal level, it's tight at the state level. We'll have a presentation from ODOT in a couple minutes talking a little bit about that and some of the innovative practices that they're going to try to employ. But you know all firsthand that the local level it's tight, with the local government fund being reduced, with just trying to meet all your needs. So these plans always try to look at the whole picture of transportation funding, federal, state, and local, not just federal, even though that's what AMATS is responsible for allocating. Maintenance was a big issue in our last plan. Our region has done a pretty good job, both, I think, because of good planning, but I don't think we can take all the credit. I think also we don't have a lot of growth in our area, and gas prices have gone up, which have reduced traffic. We don't really have the kind of congestion problems we had 10 or 15 years ago. A lot of those have been fixed. So the last plan really kind of shifted our focus onto, you know, we really need to fix what we have first, conserve our dollars, and make sure that we can maintain all of our roads and bridges before we worry too much about expanding the roads that we have. So that was a big theme. Flexibility was another one. As an agency that allocates federal funds, obviously we have to have some rules in place for how they're spent. At the same time, in today's climate, especially economically, more and more we're seeing projects have to be funded with a variety of funding sources cobbled together. We don't really ever at the staff level want to get so bureaucratic or inflexible that projects that need to happen can't happen because of some sort of red tape. So that was a big theme. And then the bike component, Krista talked at our last meeting a lot about how we're kind of shifting in this plan to focusing on making on-road biking easier. But the last plan focused a lot on the completing the regional trails that we have. The towpath actually is essentially complete through Summit County, and the portage is continuing to be completed in Portage County. We'll continue to, I think, have that focus, but there's been a lot of strides made on completing those. From a discussion standpoint, this was the last slide, and then I wanted to turn it back over to the chair and to all of you if you wanted to discuss this or had some thoughts on it. But from a staff perspective, all the issues I just mentioned are all still pretty germane to the new plan. We continue to have a funding crisis. I think it's probably fair to use the word crisis. We really do think a fix-it-first approach is still the way to go. But what we wanted to get your input on is what are other key themes you feel like we should be focusing on, you know, what kind of high-level transportation needs or even local needs in your community do you feel are out there? And the other thing would be, are we missing any key issues that we should be analyzing right now? Another one I didn't mention that we look at a lot is the connection between land use and transportation planning. You know, so we're not making land use decisions that negatively affect our roads or our transit systems, and conversely, that we're not making transportation decisions that make your lives at the local level more difficult, where you're going to have runaway development or something like that. So the last thing would just be, if you have any suggestions for our process, if you feel like we're giving you enough information, or are we giving you too much information? I probably give you too much information because I've been talking for a couple minutes here, but with that, I'll turn it back over to the chair. Hopefully that gave you an overview of what we're doing, and if you guys would like to discuss maybe what you feel like we should be looking at, please feel free to do so.
Thank you.
Were there any specific comments or suggestions that came out of the TAC on this particular?
Are you enough strength to report on that, Curtis?
Just next to
him. Yeah, the TAC, I think, was interested in, excuse me, I know it's nails in the chalkboard. The TAC was interested in, I think, especially looking at, in terms of the federal highway, and I think digging deeper, how do these decisions that happen at the national level really affect us at this level? And I think that's something that doesn't just go with the plan, but it's also kind of now, is when these things happen, when we hear the Senate wants to do X, Y, and Z, what is the local impact that there is that we could actually feel in the next couple of years? So I think that was one of the major suggestions we heard. But I think the other thing from TAC, and we also gave this presentation at CIC, I think there is a concern about fracking from the standpoint of the eastern portage and coming that way, and possibly, like, are there ways that, from energy perspectives, how can a transportation agency get in, look at those things? And the final thing we discussed was climate change, and the fact that, if those of you who remember from 4 years ago, we had a very robust discussion at the policy committee level about what to do about climate change, because originally we had nothing in the plan about it, and the policy committee's decision 4 years ago or 3 years ago was to add in a section saying, look, we know this is an issue, at the local level we think by reducing VMT, through better land use and transportation decisions, we can effectively reduce climate change.
Vehicle miles.
Actually reduce vehicle miles, and in turn, change climate change. No, I don't know. But so from that perspective, there was a small discussion about that and looking for suggestions of, did people want to try to push that language farther or pull that language in and not discuss it at all? So those are the main things from the TAC.
Jason, if I could.
Sure.
Curtis was talking about fracking, and I don't think it's just fracking we've got to talk about. We've got to talk about drilling and the impact it's going to have on our infrastructure, because those trucks moving out in and out from wells is going to severely impact our roads. And I think that, I understand we don't have much ability to do anything about it, but I think if we as a group talk about what that stress is going to be for us, we need to address it.
That's a great point. If I could just weigh in on it for a second, that like at first blush, somebody might say, why would AMATS even be involved with fracking? And I think, well, the one answer to that is we still are a forum where all the elected officials, I mean, there aren't too many opportunities. All of you from two counties have a chance to get together, but there are lots of, ancillary issues that can quickly become major issues with both transportation, as far as if trucks start, because it, disproportionately has been happening in the rural areas that aren't that equipped to handle the truck traffic. And then there's also, I know, land use ramifications, where I've read about towns in Pennsylvania where they've gotten, all this new development for worker housing and things, and they don't have zoning or land use controls really in place to even be able to deal with that. So I think those would be the tie-ins. That's a good point.
I think we're hearing, too, a little bit on the railroad side, too, in terms of freight, the shipping of the 5 million gallons of water, et cetera, all that stuff, I think plays a real impact on our infrastructure.
Are there any other comments or discussion on it?
I guess I'd just add in closing, I mean, this certainly doesn't have to be the final word on the direction the plan takes. I think as we bring things to you over the next 12 months or so, if you feel like something is either being overly emphasized you don't feel should be, or not adequately addressed, I mean, we're here to put together the plan that the policy committee feels like we should have.
If there's no other discussion, we'll move on to item B, renaming of AMATS. Jason?
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Hopefully this will be a fun discussion. I wanted to bring before you and at least throw out the possibility and try to at least get your blessing on pursuing the idea of considering renaming our organization. Just a little backstory to give you context. AMATS has been around since 1962, so one reason to think about considering doing this would be our 50th anniversary, and we could tie it to that. But 1962 is relevant. That was the year that the Federal Aid Highway Act was passed, and that is what created metropolitan planning organizations. And at that time, one of the first metropolitan planning organizations was called CATS, and it was in Chicago, the Chicago Area Transportation Study. Subsequently, many MPOs adopted the acronyms that had the word study in them. And I think as I've been at AMATS since 1998, kind of in every level from when I started as a beginning planner up to being the director, but I would say from day one, I don't know how many times I've heard from the media or from members of the public, especially, what is the study? When's the study over? Who are you guys? And I think it's the word study, especially, that doesn't convey very well what we do. It can very easily be confused with, I think, making us sound like a consulting firm or some sort of an academic enterprise. We also don't have the word planning in our name, we do have the tagline Planning for Greater Akron, which I think is very beneficial because it says planning and it says Greater Akron, and I know that we're more than just Akron. Hopefully the word greater helps with that, but what I think having Greater Akron really does help with is the minute you get outside of Northeast Ohio, if you can't tie the organization to some sort of a city, it's hard for people to know. For example, our counterpart in Youngstown is called the Eastgate Regional Council of Governments. That name won't resonate anywhere outside of Mahoning and Trumbull County because no one would know where Eastgate is if you're in Washington, D.C. So I think even for advocacy efforts, being able to tie, the region back to some sort of a place name is important. But I think the other thing is it really would help, I think, reflect, like I said, that we're a planning agency. We don't have any, the one thing we don't have any idea on is what to call it. Ideally what I would be hoping for would maybe be something that wouldn't have to be an acronym because it seems like we always have acronyms. But I would like to probably keep that Planning for Greater Akron tagline for whatever we were called. But that was really all I had. I think I'll turn it back to the chairman here if you guys want to discuss it. But what we'd be looking for today, I think, is just your general blessing to at least go out and pursue the idea and maybe solicit some help on coming up with a new name. Of course, we would come back to you. We're not going to show it up at a meeting with the agency renamed. So I would want you guys to all be comfortable with what you would want to call us. But that, I'll turn it back to Mayor Bika.
Does anyone have any comments or suggestions as they pursue this?
I have a comment because every time I tell people I'm going to AMATS, they have no idea where I've gone.
I've gotten AMVETs from people before, too.
Yeah. It's like the kids in the military. Yeah, I probably get that too.
Just a comment that the term study just doesn't fit anything. This is a transportation planning organization, and somehow the name should reflect that, I would think.
Any other comments? I guess we'll get an update next time.
We'll start doing the research and we'll see what we can come up with. Thanks.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is the deputy director from ODOT has a presentation for us.
Yeah, Mayor, before Jim gets started, I just wanted to thank you for inviting Jim to come here. And before I introduce him, I do want to introduce two District 4 people behind me. I know there's a lot of new people in the room. Basically, I brought with me our planning engineer, Dave Sicker. Dave's got about 28 years experience at ODOT, most recently our bridge and pavement guy, and he basically works closest with AMATS and our other two MPOs that we've covered on our 10-year plan and works with a lot of the local officials here. Next to him, Steve Rivelo is the finance guy, and he works with Victor to make sure all our funding and all our different funding sources, it's a staggering number, what we're supposed to be over the 10 years, and knows more than I'll ever know in my life, trust me, for how much we can get things funded. So I appreciate them coming and the reason both they came here with me is to listen to, and I've heard a couple of times Jim Riley speak. Jim is our Deputy Director for Innovative Delivery. We're pretty lucky up here in Northeast Ohio. Jim is central office employee, but he is based out of District 12 up in Garfield Heights, and comes with him about 23 years experience in the transportation sector. As Jason pointed out, back in the late 90s, I think Jim worked on the freeway management system.
They had a separate architecture, but they were.
So Jim started off from the traffic side. He has his undergrad in engineering from Dayton, his master's from Baldwin Wallace, and in closing in on 20 years with ODOT and close to 28 years in the public sector. This is one of the few times that the department's really gone out and got somebody who fits for a position that we need. Jim worked for HMTB, also worked most recently for Al Crow, and the reason he's here is because of what Jason talked about with the funding situation. We need to come up with something different. This is cutting-edge stuff from the Department of Transportation's nationwide. We're looking at ways to help with the funding situation out there. We're not going to sit back and as a department and say, oh, woe's me. We're looking for ways that we can close the gap in the short term. So, that being said, it's been great work with Jim so far. Again, I've learned something new from the presentation, and I have a handout when he's all done, which has already been updated. And this is the third time I've updated Jim's handout. So.
Thanks.
Oh,
Jason, do you have the clicker? Or is it up
to
you?
It's up
here. Oh, it is up to you. Okay. Well, thank you. Hearing some of the earlier comments, let me start with it's definitely fair to say we're in crisis. We're certainly in a transportation funding crisis, and we have been for some time. Truth be told, the model for funding transportation doesn't work. It worked back when we built the interstates, back in Eisenhower's day, right? But it doesn't work now. We don't get enough money. We're well underfunded. We've got to look for new and innovative ways. And I said it's not a new problem. And it's a problem at the state level, which I'll talk to you about. It's certainly been a problem at the local levels. I've heard about over-programming, projects, not enough money in the pipeline. Like I said, it's not new. Past administrations within ODOT and past governors have promised lots of projects, and a lot of times they held a program out there, a six-year program, but then there was a big list of projects on the bottom, that kind of like the wish list. But what this administration decided to do, they said, let's take all those projects, let's take our revenue coming in, and let's just lay it out and tell it like it is, and we did that. Some of you probably heard or saw the announcements of that. They basically said a lot of projects will be delayed 8 and 10 years, and we can't build the program that we have in front of us until 2036. We didn't do it as a game or a joke. It's a reality. It's just revenue coming in, needs, that's the way it works. So we have to find ways to fill the gap. Right now, as we sit, we have $1.6 billion in shovel-ready projects. We already have plans on the shelf ready to go out to bid that we can't bid right now. We have another $12 billion of projects that are in development all around the state, so quite a backlog. And things that I will present today, while I do appreciate we've created a new division of innovative delivery, and we've got good ideas. It's not a panacea. It's not a perfect solution for everything. But in my days, I've worked, as Tony mentioned, entirely in the private sector my whole career. And I've worked around the country with different states as they've developed P3 programs, public-private partnerships. I've looked at other ways of delivering and leveraging assets that they have in their states. So I've been afforded a lot of that experience. When I saw the leadership that was in place at ODOT and the things that ODOT was doing, I said, this is the time that Ohio is going to make a difference. So I was like, I want to come join that team. And I did in January. I've been here for a couple of months. I'm just going to outline to you real quickly, if you will, the program that we're starting to put in place. So we've got that gap. How do we begin to fill that gap? One thing we're doing as an agency is organizational and operational improvements. We've got a two-year plan to cut $100 million out of the ODOT budget through downsizing and just other efficiencies. $100 million will go directly to our capital program. Looking at two innovative ways to generate revenue. How's that? State generating revenue. Whoever thought of that? Rest area program. Currently, it's not legal to commercialize rest areas on the interstate system. However, we have a lot of rest areas that are on the non-interstate system. Those of you that familiar with rest areas. We all drive, you know, they were built back in the 50s and the 60s with much of the system. You know, it was back in the day when you didn't have a McDonald's at every interchange. It was back in the day when, you know, you pack your lunch and you probably stop in the rest area and eat a sandwich along your trip. Well, those facilities aren't being used like that anymore. As a matter of fact, they're, and now that I have driving age children, the first thing I tell them is don't stop at a rest area in the middle of the night. You know, go to a commercial development, a 24-hour truck stop, something, because they tend to be havens for crime and illicit activity sometimes. So we want to clean up the rest areas. We want to commercialize them. We want to develop them into service plaza-type facilities. So we're developing an RFP right now to allow for developers to come in and maybe put a Starbucks or a McDonald's at a rest area, and we would share in the revenue generation of that. Right now, it's costing us close to $50 million a year just to maintain and to continue to operate those rest areas. Many of them we haven't improved in many years, so there's a big capital drain out there. So with this program, we hope to at least be able to offset that $50 million and begin to generate revenue. On the interstate side, you are allowed to advertise and have a sponsorship program related with interstate rest areas. So we're employing a program there where we'll hire somebody to, you know, again, put up kiosks and advertising stations at rest areas and perhaps give naming rights to certain rest areas. They have a similar program in Virginia that generate a couple few million dollars a year. So, again, another revenue-generating program for us. And also another program that is just in development now is what we're calling our statewide sponsorship program. But there's no reason why we can't sell naming rights, if you will, for some major transportation structures or pieces of the infrastructure, interchanges. Those of you familiar down in Columbus, like Polaris and Eastgate, you know, there's a few interchanges that have had a lot of private money put into it, so it helps build the interchange. They do some decorative landscaping and such, and they help offset maintenance costs. So there's a lot of different levels of this program. On the higher level, since I am from Cleveland, I can only think of the Interbelt Bridge and, you know, how many times on the radio it's, you know, traffic's backed up on the Interbelt Bridge. Well, what if it said traffic's backed up on the State Farm Insurance Bridge? Well, what if you had to take the State Farm Insurance Bridge to get to Progressive Field? That would be kind of fun. Well, we're looking for ways to generate revenue to put it into our capital program. Those are immediate things we're working on a longer-term basis. I'll talk a little bit about what we're looking at with the Turnpike and with our P3 program. And then there's been some discussion about the new highway bill here, too. We do a lot of lobbying in D.C. to try to affect the amendments and the level of funding and the level of, if you will, strings attached to what we can and can't do. We are working with the senator to try to get an amendment in there to allow us to commercialize interstate rest areas, but that didn't pass too famously. But we're very close to that, and Jason, like the report you gave on, I really don't think we're going to see a bill this year, just due to the politics and the nature of it. We'll get continual extensions. We'll bring it up again next year, and let's hopefully politics change. But that's not a done deal. The Senate bill, you know, has passed, and it'll go to conference, and the House basically dropped their bill, and so they're going to work off the Senate bill. So still a lot of work to be done in D.C. before we'd see anything. In order to address a lot of these needs, and timing was right, I was working with a firm called Helcro when new governor, and then last March, the legislature passed a policy to allow the state to do public-private partnerships. They hired a firm by June. By the end of the year, we had developed a policy. Then it was time to implement that policy, and that's when I thought, hey, what a great career change. Should we all go over and help them implement that policy? So we've created a Division of Innovative Delivery. We want to develop new and innovative ways to, it's not just building, but it's maintaining and operating. All these public-private partnership programs really work when you think of it as long-term and life-cycle-based. If you turn over a section of a roadway or a project to a private enterprise to help operate and maintain, it can gain a lot of efficiencies over the life cycle, 30, 50 years of a roadway. We want to reduce costs, obviously enhance efficiency, and of course, like I said, generate revenue. Our objectives are to have timely delivery. We want to encourage competition. Again, being around working in other states, when when Ohio says we want to start a P3 program, well, there's lots of developers and investors out there that want to bring money to the state and help us build more infrastructure. But they want to know that we're real. They want to know that we got the political courage to do it. They want to know that we got the organization in place, that we're ready to do this. And we are. We've established a reliable and uniform process, and we created this new division. The legislation, House Bill 114, allows us to deliver capital investment-related projects. Those are the big glorified projects, and I'm going to talk about a few of those, but also O&M only. For example, in the Columbus area, the 270 outer loop, we're considering developing an RFP, and I know there's interest from contractors out there. Contractors could submit an unsolicited proposal to us that we'd have to review and evaluate, and there's talk of them putting in a proposal to maintain and operate the 270 corridor over a long period of time. Again, that would be a great way to enhance the efficiency of that corridor and probably save us money over the long term. We'd evaluate that. So we're looking at programs like that as well as others like the rest areas I talked about. And this is a real interesting chart, just kind of the world of project delivery. ODOT, and I believe many of the locals, all the locals, we sit right here, design it, bid it, build it. And it's a very segmented project. It's a very public takes all the risk delivery, okay? ODOT's gone through two value-based design build projects. So that's where you're transferring a little bit of the design risk over to the private entity, but you still have more public risk, and so you're kind of moving along this curve. If you get up here, you're transferring more risk of the finance and the operation and the maintenance to the private sector. And as you go move this way, you're getting into a more integrated process. So the ultimate up here is design, build, finance, operate, and maintain, DBFOM. We're going to look at delivering some projects this way. Again, it'll allow us to speed up the time to bring in capital at different times to help us deliver the program faster. And it's not just a black and white. Each project has its own kind of optimal risk allocation. So what we're talking about here is doing business different. It's not the old way of ODOT or doing business where we develop plans and then go through a 60 and a 90 and a 30-60% review. No, it's developing performance specifications and allowing the private sector to meet those performance specifications. So it's about transferring risk. When you transfer risk to them, you're freeing up the risk of yourself, and it becomes a balance, and there's a cost implication to it. So we're looking at the world of projects that ODOT has on its radar, and projects that are good candidates. This is a high-level screening kind of list. It'd be over a couple hundred million dollars and have the potential for design, build, and O&M to be part of the projects. It'd be ripe and ready and on a priority list. And as we identified a few projects that meet this criteria already, the next thing we do is begin to really do a quantitative strategic assessment of that project. It's called a value for money analysis. We look at how we'd normally build it, design, bid, build, versus some P3 type delivery mechanism. And we bring everything to present value and say, here's the difference in time and money. And in a lot of cases, it becomes very prudent to follow a P3 approach. I won't belabor this, but this is the process we developed. The green and the red are the decision points. At the high-level screening, we can decide whether to move forward or not. Detailed-level screening, we decide whether to move forward. Goes through our track, and then we begin developing an RFP or RFQ and RFP. At any point, we can exit the delivery process. But this is what we put in place at the DOT. This is the organization. Just one other part of the theory here is I'm working directly for the chief of staff and the director outside of ODOT's normal delivery process because, again, it's different. It takes a different mindset. You can't have all the ODOT engineers that are used to reviewing plans at 30% and requiring this and requiring that. So we're going to have this a small group. We'll probably only have 6 or 8 people here. We'll have teams of consultants to help us deliver specific projects. And then we have all the resources within the DOT to pull from as we need. Just tell you a little bit about the projects in the pipeline. And again, we're going to continually evaluate projects to be part of this pipeline, but where we are now, we've got some projects under consideration, others under development, procurement, et cetera. Under consideration means just that, we're considering it. We haven't done much. There's the Opportunity Corridor up in Cleveland. Eastern Corridor down in Cincinnati, talked about the maintenance contract. We've got a whole bunch of garages we need to rebuild every year. We want to turn that into a public-private partnership program. And again, there's real estate. We have a lot of real estate that we can be turning into revenue-generating assets. A lot of things we're looking at and considering. Under development, we'll talk a little bit about the Turnpike, Portsmouth, and Brent Spence, just to give you a flavor of what a project can look like. These are other projects in the Columbus area that this is would be an interchange development type project we're trying to push forward, similar to an Easton and a Gemini place. We have draft RFPs, as I mentioned, out for these service plaza development. And then we're privatizing our parts delivery to all of our equipment, to like a Napa type. We'll be providing all of our parts. We've got cell tower contracts where, you know, we were generating revenue out of that by allowing them to put cell towers on our property. Let me just tell you a little bit about the couple of projects ongoing. Certainly the Turnpike, relates to our area here. I'm leading that study. We're calling it the opportunity analysis. We're truly looking at every option from leaving it alone, which I'm pretty sure we're not going to leave it alone, to a full lease. But there's a lot of options in between. We could be going out with operation and maintenance contracts and just providing efficiencies that way. ODOT could be taking it over, and we could be bonding off of that and generating revenue. The whole idea is to generate revenue off of this wonderful asset that we have in the state that there's a real misconception about, because it's not going anywhere. And we're going to make sure it operates just like it operates now. And we're going to make sure tolls don't increase any faster than inflation would ever increase at any point in time, which has been the rate they've increased since 1980. So people do have they get a little sensitive about the Turnpike issue, but the point is, whatever happens, nothing's going to change out there for us, except for the fact that we're going to be able to leverage and generate revenue there to help fill the gap. We're doing a whole series of in-depth interviews. In fact, I am going up to Eastgate and then over to the Ravenna area tomorrow. And these in-depth interviews, we get a group of about six, mayors or chamber folks or other decision makers in the community, and try to have, you know, frank discussions about what we're doing and what the impacts could be. Portsmouth Bypass, I know it's nowhere around here, but it's a great example to understand that when we say public-private partnership, it doesn't mean tolls. Okay, this is what we call a greenfield, so it's a new road. It's a 16-mile road that right now ODOT's got programmed in three phases, and one phase is ready to go. The other two phases are, like, programmed out many years down the road. But we could turn this over to a private developer or concessionaire that could build it all right now today, finance it over a period of time, and take on the long-term operation and maintenance. In the end, we can have the whole project built 8 years ahead of schedule at a significantly reduced cost. Construction costs are actually pretty decent right now. And we would be paying them an availability payment or a guaranteed fixed price for construction and O&M over a period of time. That's as long as the road is available to performance specifications, we make the payment. That it really becomes a financing mechanism that allows us to spread out some of the investment that allows us to build the road now. And finally, the Brent Spence Bridge in the Cincinnati area is a real high-level example. In fact, the governor's down there right now talking about this project. That it's $2.4 billion. It's way more than we can even build. It's a bi-state project, obviously with Kentucky, and we've got a memorandum of understanding with them about that, but it's hard to see how this project gets built without tolls. I mean, today's day and age of the gas tax funding, we've got to find new and innovative ways to build things. We're not far from the fact that any new capacity on a highway or a freeway or any new river crossing wouldn't be tolled. I mean, it's very likely tolls would be considered in all these situations, just because there is not the revenue to build the infrastructure that we need. So there you go. That's a little sample of what we're doing at ODOT right now to help address our needs.
Pass out that handout now, Jim.
Sure. Handout that summarizes the Ohio needs that I went through at the beginning.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, hi.
Sure.
Are we talked about the infrastructure problem. Lobbying with the other states that are in the same town that they're referring in, so we can get together and put pressure on our congressmen.
Yeah.
I think Pennsylvania, New York, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, wherever, control a lot of the, obviously the House. I mean,
right. We definitely are. We do a lot of that lobbying in New York. You see on that sheet in the bottom left corner, it says some of the states that we have recently talked to back at the ESHCO conferences, Michigan in particular, and Nevada in particular, that have similar interest in supporting rest area and sponsorship programs and, you know, and other TIFIA loan application. I didn't get into that, but there's a great government loan program that that facilitates these P3 programs and availability payment model, it affecting the legislation in that regard. But we're working with a number of states on that regard. And again, there's opposing amendments that come in to make it harder for us. I mean, even from Obama to back to people have recognized that we're in a funding crisis. We need to be innovative. They want us to look at P3s. They want us to look at tolling. They've created pilot tolling programs. They've created vehicles for us to deliver P3s. There's other parts of the legislature that are trying to cut tolling programs and make it harder for P3s, and it becomes a, you know, a mixed bag out there. But the states, we're all in the same position. The only one who's pretty much not in our position, ironically, is Indiana, because of what they did 6 years ago when they leveraged the Indiana tollway. The program is ripe and robust and has been for several years.
We recently had a negative experience with one of innovative projects. One of our villages, Driffield and Bath Township, was part of a project to replace seven bridges over Interstate 77. The local community asked for wider sidewalks along the bridge. If we'd have known about it, the project sooner, we had a 30-day comment period. We had put the request in writing. We had it bid properly. As it is, communities are being asked to kick in close to $100,000 that we don't have. We're struggling with that. We're talking about connecting communities, building sidewalks throughout the area. We have a major high school sitting there, servicing two townships that suddenly has to kick in money to meet the requirements of a sizable project. We should have walkways on. So we have to be careful.
If I could just respond to that, that project, it was a design-build project, but like any other project, it's been on the tip for years. So I don't think the fact that it was a design-build project necessarily changes anything. Whether you have a traditional project or a design-build project, if you know in advance, you know enough time that, in this case, local communities were interested in sidewalks, we could have incorporated it in either type of project, either a design-build or a traditional project. Just a matter of, I think, the information got to us at the last minute. So I think that's where we had the problems on that project, not the fact that it was a design-build.
Same information got to us at the last minute also. We found that at the pre-construction meeting.
But we worked it out. It's worked out.
Expensive. Any other comments or questions?
Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is resolutions. The first resolution is Resolution 2012-06, approving the Amendment Number 11 to the Transportation Improvement Program for the calendar year 2012 to 2015.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Jim, for your presentation. Good luck with your endeavors. A couple amendments to wrap up our meeting this afternoon. Resolution 2012-06 is amendment number 11 to the 2012-2015 TIP. This amendment adds seven new projects and then makes changes to either the scope, schedule, or funding of seven others. I'll just touch briefly, touch on the new projects briefly. The new projects are State Route 5 in Rootstown and Ravenna Townships. This is a new resurfacing project. Interstate 76 between Gilcrest Road and Talmadge Road. This is pavement grinding. The surface is very smooth, and this will grind grooves into the pavement to increase friction and make it safer. Interstate 76, 77, this is actually closing the westbound on-ramp to the freeway from Grant Street, which is what fledges. Anyhow, this is actually closing the ramp to make that weave area a lot safer. Interstate 76, 77, and State Route 8, this is engineering for the central interchange. Interstate 77 is a bridge painting project in Akron, four bridges on the south leg. And State Route 18 in Coffey Township and Bath Township, this is relocating Montrose West over to Heritage Woods. This is, once again, this is just engineering funding for that project. And then State Route 82. Up in Sagamore Hills Township, this is a safety improvement. This is putting in some turn lanes in one section of State Route 82, and then there's revisions to seven other existing projects. And the staff recommends approval of resolution 2012-06.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. Are there any questions? The chair will entertain a motion.
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. The second resolution is 2012-07, approving amendment number 12.
Resolution 2012-07 approves amendment 12. To the TIP. This is adding additional funds for a PARTA project. This is adding funds to a bus wash. And I don't have a lot of details about this, but this is actually just additional funds of $250,000 for a bus wash. And the staff recommends approval. Resolution 2012.
Do we know what the total project cost is? We're adding an additional
$250,000. I'm sorry, I don't have that. If anyone is here from PARTA, I looked for it before the meeting, and I couldn't find it right off. I was hoping maybe a PARTA representative might have
one. I'm here, but I don't have it.
No. Okay. Sorry.
We can get it for you.
Is there any other comments or questions? The chair will entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. The last item on the agenda would be other business. Mr. Segedy has a presentation.
I promise I will not keep you long, but I'd be remiss if, Bob, I don't know if you knew we were going to do this to you or not, but I'll make it painless. But I did want to recognize Bob Papp for his service as chair last year. So, Bob, I do just have a plaque to present to you, and I won't give a grand speech, but Bob's been a tireless advocate for transportation. He's been a great RTA director for many years at Metro RTA, and I wanted to commend him and really commend all of you for taking your time to come to our meetings. And I know it's not a paid position to come and sit in these meetings, and probably sometimes feels like it should be. But thanks to all of you on the committee, but Bob especially for chairing for us last year.
Is there any other business that anyone would like to bring up? The chair will entertain a motion to adjourn to May 17th.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.